Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole-body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Portland's favorite morning roast.
I was listening to the boys this morning.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
They've got really good meat. They got great meat.
Dirt and Sprague.
No, dude, get right to the meat.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody.
The band
is back together. Sprague is returning from San Diego. They call it the Whales. What do they call it again?
Ooh, I like it.
We'll get to Ken Barkley coming up an hour from now. Our friend Ken Barkley, Lockie Lockerson, will join the show. He's got a gambling guide out for the NFL season. I am going to ask him. I don't know how closely he gambles on college football anymore, but he's big into futures, and if he does have a ticket, like, how does he feel about the futures of college football? Is he high on one team over the other, or is it all kind of jumbled together near the top? That will be 1 hour from now. And we got Saturday Story coming up, so we got a lot to get to the rest of the way. You tease it there at the end of the last hour. Old Dan Lanning at his press conference yesterday. We're about the halfway point of camp, I'd say, right? Yeah, about a week and a half to go until the game start. 2.5 weeks for Oregon. And he was asked something interesting. You mentioned Mike McDonald earlier in the show, and a tidbit from Hard Knocks last night about how he had to grow and learn how to coach to win and not to lose. Mm-hmm. There's a balance there, right? Of like, you want to be cautious and protect things, but also you got to know how to be aggressive and keep your foot on the gas. Here is a question to Dan Lanning from yesterday at his press conference about how much he's grown as a coach. He asked all his players, think about where you were 365 days ago to where you are now, and a reporter asked him that question.
You know, ultimately, I think there's a lot of self-study for me of, okay, what are the things that I want to attack? I'm not necessarily going to share every single piece of that with you guys, but there's situations we've been in the past where it's like, okay, how can I handle that situation better? I think a lot of coaches might grab a practice script from last season and roll it out and say, hey, that's the same one that we're going to use. You know, I think we've always done a really good job of saying, okay, what's the needs of our team based off this last scrimmage? How do we need to adapt practice? What are we struggling with? You know, we struggled with tempo the other day in some of our scrimmage settings. So let's recreate that more in practice. But I think our ability to adapt, create drills that fit the skills that we have to work on has been, you know, a strength for us and our program. And I think, again, you know, leaning into our coaches, I've had a lot more of our coaches and our players get up in front of our team this year beyond just me, and being able to make sure that, you know, a lot of times it's a common message, but it's coming from a different voice, which has been really refreshing to see throughout fall camp.
That is the CBS preseason coach of the year to you.
Yeah, it is.
Okay? That's an award that will go up in his office that he will never forget. It's one of the most iconic awards you can win in all of football.
Who won it last year?
I mean, we all know who won it last year. Duh. Probably Steve Sarkisian.
Over Cignetti?
Going into the year, it wouldn't have been Cignetti. Preseason? Oh. Yeah, Indiana was like number 20. Who would have been the preseason? Probably Texas was number one last year, were they not?
They were.
To a lot of people, arch hype.
Preseason CBS.
It could have been Ryan Day, maybe. Ohio State had big expectations. Is there an article? Is it a bad one? Is it a bad one or a good one? Do I feel good or bad now?
He is now the current coach at Virginia Tech.
Ah, James Franklin was your coach. No.
Dan's going to be at Oklahoma next year.
What are we doing here?
That just took a turn that I was not willing to accept, but it is.
Oh, no.
I mean, look, he has talked a lot about a veteran-led team, and that certainly helps, right? You got so many guys returning back for another year. One funny note, I didn't send the audio, but it was a funny tidbit from Mateo, who had his press availability yesterday.
Oh, the media blocking
out
things.
He said he mutes his dad on social media, which is absolutely the right call.
So am I.
Like, it's a lot.
We get it, dude. You're proud of your kids. I'm happy for you, but dear God.
Don't blame me at all for being proud.
Any criticism, you have to quote tweet it and say why they sucked
and then somebody's
why they struggled. Yeah, then you block everybody.
Big expectations for the old Danimal this year. And I mean, that's one of the biggest questions about him.
Huge expectations,
and
the program would say, for the Danimal.
How have you grown? And how have you evolved? And how have you gotten better? And he's never going to get into specifics of stuff like that, right? He's not going to go, well, actually, this third down calls that we've been making, I hate it, or that we're going to do better at this. He won't give you the details of it, but it is a looming question over their season, because you do the coaches progress and you learn, and he's still incredibly young and early in his career.
Mm-hmm.
How has he grown as a head coach going into this year? Time will tell.
Well, and I think a big part of that is going to be the coordinator performances, mm-hmm. right? Like, a lot of controversy or questioning of who he hired at OC and DC, and we've talked at nauseam about that, and now we kind of have to wait to see how they actually play before we get to the criticism part. It's a lot of wait and see. And I think when you end your season dirt the last two seasons the way that they have, look, we know they have the talent. We know how everybody feels about their roster. They got all these guys coming back. They're absolutely loaded on the defensive side. Dante's back at quarterback. He's, you know, gone through his mental health struggles, and
yeah.
golf has helped him a lot with that, getting off social media. It's funny. It always seems to be getting off social media, dude. Seems to be a huge factor why their mental health is better.
Right.
But when you look at the laundry list of coaches, The Athletic wrote about the college football coaching tiers. And while I don't agree with some of the premise here, the two guys in tier one, there's only two.
Mm. It's got to be Cignetti, because he just won the championship.
Yeah.
And Kirby. I mean, if you don't have Kirby in there, yeah, it's got to be
but
Kirby.
But, like, why would Ryan Day not be in that?
He is
He's lost five games his entire career.
We don't give him any credit. We give other coaches credit, and he gets none of it.
Yeah, right?
Really,
Mario, I think, has jumped up for some because they got to the title game as a 10 seed. Dan is in a category with Sark, with DeBoer, with maybe Dabo, depending on how you feel about him, of
Freeman,
probably. Yeah. Like, if they don't get to a certain level, right, maybe Dabo's expectations are going to be a little different than what Dan's are. But I just think there's a category of coaches that, and Dan Lanning is one of them, it's a handful of them that, depending on what their teams do, we are either going to move them down or they're going to jump up to the Cignetti and Smart platform.
Yeah, if one of those guys wins the national championship, whether it's Sark, Freeman, Lanning, Freeman, DeBoer, if Ryan Day gets a second one in 3 years.
I mean, there'd be no questioning putting him in that top tier. I think he should be in it anyway, and I don't even feel the greatest about Ryan Day.
Right.
But if you're willing to dye your hair and pierce your nipples at 40-something years old, like, there's got to be something said about you, right? So
they're moving senior day, too. Did you see that, by the way?
I don't want to be disrupted, but I will say egregious.
Egregious.
I read this on a beach,
yeah,
and I just stared at the ocean. Absolutely egregious behavior.
They're doing it week one.
Do you know how utterly pathetic you have to be to move senior day from the Michigan week to week one because you're worried about distraction?
It was funny, too, because it came in the height. We did.
How about you just coach and game plan right. and you celebrate your guys after putting in a long season's worth of effort and work?
What are we doing here? The timing of it was funny because it's right on the heels of Kyle Whittingham not hating Ohio State enough, and that makes every Michigan fan freak out, and then you got Ohio State to say, oh, yeah, you don't care enough. We care even more. We're moving our senior day.
Dude,
They play Ball State in week one. That's their senior days against Ball State on the Big Ten Network.
I read, Oregon State had to do something weird like this 1 year. Their last home game.
The Hurricane game, yeah.
The Hurricane game with
Lafayette, Louisiana.
It was a college that has no.
It was a team down in the Gulf region,
game,
and it was impacted by a hurricane.
Yeah, it was
Nicholls State.
Nicholls State.
Thank you. Yeah. Weirdest moment ever. So I read this coaching article, and I'm like, I started mentally defending Ryan Day. I'm like, how's Ryan Day not put himself in tier one with what he's accomplished?
Yeah.
And then maybe 20 minutes later, I saw the Ryan Day story, and I went, really? Really? After I just mentally defended
you? No distractions.
What are you...
No distractions. Too much going on.
Are their families not in town every week
of
the season?
We're only focusing on the game.
They're paid. What are we doing?
Yeah, I know.
What are you worried about?
The distraction thing was stupid. However, I think the idea is really good. That this one.
Why do you want to celebrate it in the beginning?
Well, one, in case anybody gets hurt.
Now, sometimes you get the biggest ovations for the guys who got hurt along the way.
I understand that. But I also think, because the tradition in college basketball, when you have senior day or high school basketball, all the seniors, like the walk-ons, whatever, they're starting. I don't want to give away a series in the Michigan game. Ball State, I can start even the walk-on.
You need to give a series away? How about you just do a standard run to the right play with all the seniors starting?
Well, that's the funny part about this, because I see the argument. They're not going to do that. They're not starting their walk-ons in the first.
Also, what
Jeremiah
college?
Smith's not going to be lined up on snap number one for Ohio State's offense.
They're going to have some putsy white kid who's a walk-on and a
just,
coach's
there's
kid.
There's no chance they do that.
Well,
none.
More,
on kickoff,
there's
maybe.
No chance they do
maybe
that.
On
put
kickoff.
Them in on the kickoff. I don't know.
Yeah, opening kickoff.
This isn't a thing anymore.
Kick
and
it
also,
out of the end zone.
What college program are you talking about with seniors?
Right.
Well, there's that,
Oregon's
too.
Got a few of
so
them
it's not.
Year, yeah.
It shouldn't be that many.
Yeah,
at
but
that
they're
point.
Transfers. See, all these kids are transfers now. They didn't start there. It's usually the third journey there.
I don't know. I didn't think it was that big a deal.
What a little
I could get behind it. I could...
What a little B. You're like 1-4 in your last five.
I just think
Michigan.
It's an example of a guy who cannot stop thinking about it. It's, he cannot
they
stop
just
thinking.
Won the game.
I know it doesn't matter. He won the national championship. It didn't matter because he lost to Michigan.
I know.
It's all he thinks. It consumes every fiber of his being. I digress.
Well, that's because it consumes every fiber of the being of the fan base.
Right. That's the way that they think. So here's the list that you're talking about. So you mentioned Cignetti's one and Kirby Smart's. Those are the top two guys.
Yeah.
The list of tier two ish guys, like the next block of guys: Mario, Ryan Day, Kalen DeBoer, James Franklin is still in there. Marcus Freeman, Lane Kiffin, Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian, Dabo Swinney, and Kyle Whittingham.
Well, but how many coaches, because I know what you're saying on the Franklin thing, we know the big game record and all that.
That was pretty bad last year.
Well, no, it absolutely... Well, it,
I'd bump
I
him down a tier for that. I'm still
mountain.
High on Franklin at Virginia Tech. I think that was a great hire for them. I don't know how you... That's a bump... Like, you lost to UCLA, Northwestern.
But
the season
like
spiraled out of control.
Did it not feel like a culmination buildup of the side of the mountain crash?
It's kind of on him of never being able to get over the hump to a certain extent. He caused that mountain to be in their way of the plane. I'm still in on him as a coach, and I think he'll do good at Virginia Tech.
Do you disagree with anybody on the tier two?
James Franklin's the only one. James Franklin's the only one that I would bump down. The rest of the guys, Dabo's got two titles, so you can say whatever you want about him, but that has to count for something. Kyle Whittingham, for what he's done for his time at Utah, I got no issue with it. I do think there's an interesting conversation that we're kind of in our bubble here in the Northwest where Lanning will be the focal point of a lot of this.
Oh, yeah.
It is really funny to think about how many bubbles that you go to across the country where it's literally the same thing.
I know.
If Sark doesn't win a title to Texas this year, their fan base is freaking out.
I mean, week one,
freaking
if he doesn't
out.
Win that game, they're freaking out.
Marcus Freeman has the easiest schedule on the planet this year. And
he
if
does.
You don't make the playoff and go on a deep run, they're freaking out because they're one of the favorites. Lane Kiffin's literally never won a playoff game.
He could have coached in one, but he chose not to.
He chose to walk away from his team, and maybe they win, maybe they don't, but he doesn't get credit for it. Pete Golden gets that dub.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just like
he's but he also has a playoff win if he stays because they played freaking Tulane.
Touche. They would have won that for Touche.
It's no different than Dan's first playoff win
totally
of like James Madison.
Totally fair. He would have had one, but he walked away from his team, and so he's never actually accomplished it as a coach. And DeBoer, dude, if they're not going to fire him because Alabama's not that rich,
they just extended it.
If they go 8-4,
they're
outside of that facility with pitchforks wanting to run his family out of town.
Or they're calling in to find mom to let us know.
And even for, you know, I made the argument throughout the offseason that I think the perception should have changed a little bit with Mario because he showed on the big stage that he could knock off opponents that he was not, like, that was a great run that Miami went on. Now, there's still going to be a program that likely stubs their toe. But again, on his example, like, if you have a year where you regress and you don't make the playoff or you don't win the ACC or you don't win a playoff game, like, that's how quickly this stuff evolves into a shouting match of, we don't have the right guy, and we're frustrated with our head coach.
There's obviously a Mario tie-in locally because he was here. He had some disappointing moments, but he had some great legendary moments with the Rose Bowl, with the win at Columbus. Like, he, obviously, it was great, right, for the most part. Didn't get a national championship, but he established something that had never been done at Oregon with the recruiting and winning the conference, all that. He then goes to Miami, and I understand the tie. But if I remove Mario out for conversation's sake, what I find interesting, DeBoer, different. Ryan Day, I think, should be tier one. Dabo, you can put there because of the titles. But, man, those were a long time ago.
And when
you can't evolve with a sport,
I know.
It's how I felt about Belichick at the end. It's like, I do say you're one of, if not the greatest.
It's very strange.
But I can't put you in the category anymore.
They were 7-5 last year.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, dude. Remember where they were ranked preseason. And Kyle Whittingham, we'll see what happens at Michigan. Maybe it's too late, or maybe he'll say, look at me with resources.
Yeah.
But I cannot get off the sticking point. Marcus Freeman, Lane Kiffin, Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian. I think those four in particular for me, not just because we cover or talk about Oregon, I just find all four, like, how do you separate them? Like, if I was to really...
They all have resources. They've all had success.
Exactly.
They've all had big wins.
Resources be damned.
Yeah.
Big wins be damned. who feels like they give you an advantage at coach? If Georgia fan or everybody else feels like they step out there and their coach is giving them the advantage against said other big team, or Indiana now because they just won the whole freaking thing, gets out there, they're going to feel in every game this year in Indiana, their coach is going to give them the decided advantage in it. Of the four, which one gives you the feeling the most? And that you can say, Dan, if you want.
Yeah, you can feel a certain way, but it's not. Yeah,
you know, maybe it's Sark, but also Sark has moments, man. And then
right.
Lane, maybe Lane has just as many playoff wins as Dan does. But he stays at LSU, if he stays at Ole Miss. Yeah. And then Freeman, who missed the playoff entirely last year because they lost the game to Miami.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know what the answer of that one is. And those are the four for me that if I'm looking at that tier of coaches, which one of those steps up and makes this list of tier one? And maybe it's Ryan Day wins the whole thing and he's in it next year. And all those guys who didn't win it are stuck in the same spot. But those four are the most interesting to me going into the college football season. Franklin's rebuilding. Mario obviously got to a great step with Miami. Does he do it again?
There is an aspect of, similar to Freeman kind of last year, when you get to that point, there is a... If they don't make the playoff, to my point, they will be upset about that.
Oh,
but if they
yes.
just make the playoff and maybe lose, or like there's a bit of a freebie year that you get. I yep. think if you make a national championship,
We know about Day, Dabo, Kyle. I just think those are the four most interesting coaches going into the season because yeah. Lane and what he did with Ole Miss and LSU,
right?
Dan with this getting bludgeoned in your last game of the season in an embarrassing way.
Mm-hmm.
Freeman missing the playoff, making the title game the year prior, and then Sarkisian. How do you not make the playoff at Texas?
I know, this year especially. The only other one that I would throw into that category, because I'm with you on some of the, like Mario last year title game, Day should be tier one. He just won a championship. Franklin of Virginia Tech, the expectations are higher than they've been, but not to compete.
But it's a big rebuild, right? Like right? We know that. Yeah.
You win 8-9 games this year, you're over the moon probably as a Virginia Tech fan, which he's pretty good at winning 8 games every year. And Dabo, historically speaking, the only other one that I would throw in there, and I think we just, like, it's interesting how the conversation has shifted on him, is Kalen DeBoer. Because if you go back 3 years ago, when he beat my team twice and made the national championship, he was Kurt Cignetti before Kurt Cignetti.
He was.
He was
yeah.
this old guy who had been a coach for a long time, worked his way through lower levels, quick stop at Fresno State, turned him around, gets to Washington, wins 10 games in year one, goes undefeated in the national. Like, he was the coaching guru. He was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going into year three, and they have not, they won one playoff game, right? They beat Oklahoma.
They beat Oklahoma last year.
Missed the playoff game. They got yeah. smoked in the SEC title game. Like, he's had some questionable losses.
Embarrassed in the Rose Bowl by
Embarrassed
Indiana.
In the, which, hey, you know, happened to my team too.
Sure.
So I'm not going to kill you for that, but it's like, to me, he has to be in there because if they go 9-3 this year and miss the playoffs.
But if they go 9-3 with the, well, I forget the kid's name, the freshman quarterback.
Keelon Russell. Is the likely starter
yeah.
at Alabama.
If he goes out and he plays relatively well for a freshman and they go 9-3, I know the fan base is going to
try and sell
off,
the optimism.
I think people yeah. like you and I would be more logical about, like, dude, that's a pretty good year with a freshman freaking quarterback in the SEC.
No doubt about it. The schedule's going to be challenging. It's just like you're going into your third year at Alabama, man, and the in-state recruiting stuff, and it just, like, there are some alarm bells, I think, going off there that I just – the reason I pointed out is it's just funny how quickly narratives can change, because if I would have told you Kalen DeBoer going to Alabama seemed like a slam dunk for everybody, and
yep.
I'm not saying it won't be. He might win the national championship this year. Maybe Keelon Russell is the savior that they've been looking for, and he's the right piece of quarterback, and they get better on the O-line and they can run the ball this year. It's just to know, I think he belongs in that category because you can't put him on a pedestal,
yeah.
watch two, underwhelming from last year. It's a little unfair, but he hasn't lived up fully, I guess, to the hype, and then not put that same level of pressure on him. Financially, they can't afford to fire him, but I think in terms of a pressure cooker, he's right there with all the other guys.
I think that's a valid thing to say. I think I'd also add the context of what have we also learned, though, while he's been there? And you know, fair or not fair, I just will always probably live in the opinion of, I think Saban got out because he knew he couldn't do certain things anymore that other programs couldn't.
Yeah, it was going to balance out at the top.
Yeah,
and, yeah,
he shouldn't have even made the playoff his last year. And if he retires not making the playoff, we don't change his legacy, but we're like, hey, interesting. Like, look at that. He mm-hmm. went out and didn't make the playoff. We've learned that Alabama's kind of a broke boy in this sport in a way that, like, other programs aren't, right? Like,
right.
who would have had it on their bingo card 2 years ago that we were going to find out that Indiana is more deep-pocketed than Alabama.
They have the largest living alumni base in America.
Well, and they're financially, you're seeing the difference. I'm not saying it's excusable for DeBoer to not recruit in-state or to not have better recruiting class. I'm just simply pointing out, like, yeah, on DeBoer, you're right. We're also learning which programs have their S organized and which programs are more deep-pocketed. And Alabama is deep-pocketed, but not to the Ohio State level, not to Indiana level, not to maybe Oregon,
Texas,
LSU, Notre Dame, Texas level.
Yeah. And Michigan belongs in that category.
And in this landscape of college football,
matters a lot.
The Jimmies and the Joes matter a great deal.
Yes, yes, it does. I have a fun college football question I'd like to ask on the other side. As somebody who's going into a year knowing that just like every week's going to feel like a death march. Like, can we just survive? Can we get to the end of the year?
Yeah.
Would you take this deal if you were me? And I'll explain. We'll throw it to you next on The Fan.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers. And you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. 8:29. Our buddy Ken Barkley coming up at the top of the hour. Find my Ken Barkley drops here.
You listen to the McAfee album?
Are you serious? It's so good.
It's so good, dude.
It's country music, isn't it? Doesn't he do country music?
I did not listen. Actually, that's not true. I did. I inadvertently heard a song on Twitter because it was all over social media. It sounded like Jelly Roll. If that's your thing. If that's your thing. That could be your thing if that's your thing. I don't know if I called that country music, but you know,
people were saying he's still complaining, and they're like, what are you complaining about?
You got a $100 million TV deal,
You're the
dude.
Number one face of ESPN.
Yeah. You see, by the way, if you don't like Pat McAfee, I got some bad news for you.
Bum, 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 bum.
Guess who's getting added to the Monday Night Football desk?
Bum, 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 bum.
What do you think he's going to do? Let's start taking bets on what he's going to do for the ABC ESPN Super Bowl in February.
Oh.
Because you know he's going to do something.
Do they have an alternate broadcast the way he does college football?
Can you do that for the Super Bowl? I guess why not?
Why can't you?
Yeah. Do you want all the numbers on one channel? Can you combine the numbers? How does that? I never understood from a rating standpoint how that works.
I think they'd figure it out.
But you know he's going to be involved. And Kirk Herbstreit wants his music on College Game Day. He wants him to perform on College Game Day.
He does?
He does, yeah.
Did you see Kirk Herbstreit's dog has an NIL deal?
I did not see that, no. I do criticize Kirk Herbstreit for one thing. This might get me blocked on Twitter.
Blocking me?
He did block you on Twitter. He put out a post recently of he was in the Tampa area, and that's where, I believe it's Tampa, don't quote me on that, but wherever Lee Corso lives.
Okay.
And he called Corso up, said, hey, I'm going to be in town. He was there doing something. I don't know what he was doing. And he said, I'd love to come see you, Lee. And Lee demanded that he drive to the airport to go see Kirk Herbstreit.
And Lee demanded Kirk.
Lee was basically like, I'm going to come to you.
I'm going
to
pick you
up. I'm coming to you.
Oh.
And Kirk Herbstreit was like, he was stubborn, but, you know, that's the old ball coach.
He didn't drive.
According to Kirk Herbstreit's tweet, he came by himself and drove by himself at the age of 91, not knowing what day of the week it is.
Not a chance.
If that is the case.
Not a chance.
I got a problem with that.
Where's Mitch McConnell?
I got a problem with that.
Where's Mitch McConnell?
I believe he's currently dead. I think he's currently dead.
Will you show me the film him being alive, and I'll show you the film of Lee Corso driving himself to the airport.
If Lee Corso's on the roads, we got some problems here, man. We got some major, major issues.
By the way, side note, best day to leave San Diego, Tuesday.
Tuesday's a good day to get out of there.
Not a soul. Man. Security was less than a minute.
Nice and light. Get through here.
Oh, great.
A couple of quick thoughts here at the Fan Text Line, 503-864-6326. Then I'll get to my scenario here in a moment. Somebody said, I like Lanning, but he calls big games differently and he can't win them.
Yeah, we got the new big game whoops, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the playoff outcomes the last 2 years are obviously alarming, and I don't disagree with that notion. I also like the idea of not winning. Like, what's your definition of a big game?
The playoff.
So that's the only ones that count?
I think
Does the Texas Tech game count?
Yes.
Okay, so he can win them?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
is the Big Ten championship a big game? Is playing Ohio State 1-3 the biggest matchup in the history of Autzen Stadium a big game?
I think that's a big game.
Okay. So, yeah. That's the hard part
conference
that I have with
title it. Games are fascinating to me now. I don't Certainly. Know how to gauge conference title games anymore because it seems to suck to be a top four seed.
Yeah. They changed the four. I mean, now it's a little bit different because, but yeah, Indiana's the only one with the bye that has won after the bye and the layoff.
Right.
Everybody else is lost. That's the only thing. Look, the
but it's a looming thing. Like, that's a real looming narrative about him. And I think you can be right to disagree with it because
he has won big games.
The only game he hasn't lost that he should have won was that Oregon State Civil War. He beats all the teams he should beat.
Yeah.
There's not a doubt about it. Now, he also beat Ohio State, to your credit, to your point. He beat Texas Tech. That matters, right?
They were undefeated. That was an Orange Bowl. That was a playoff game.
But I think going into that, we didn't question whether they would win that game. I can't recall everybody's opinion that you and I had, all the opinions we had.
I think it depended on your view of Oregon and whether you like
but
it or
not. But I think we both agreed that, like, we're taking Oregon to win this game.
They were the favorite in the game, no doubt.
And I noted after, they were 6-0, and it felt like it was 20-0 with the way their defense was playing and how bad Tech's offense looked.
Right.
I just think...
He has not won the most important game. I'm just pushing back on the narrative that he has not won a big... Like, we got to stop doing that.
The Washington games, I think, hurt people a lot.
Of course.
You lose multiple times in one season.
That's
to
where
a
this
rival.
Started, is he can't win a big game. And then the next year, he beat Ohio State. And it was like, well, now he...
I know
he can win a big game.
But then it's how you lose to Ohio State.
But then he lost
right?
the second time. Yeah. I get it. I'm just pointing out he has indeed won a big game.
I just... I would be gearing up mentally... Even if you don't agree with it after this season, that you're just like, come on, man, you can win a big game. They just haven't won the biggest game of their seasons yet.
Right.
You may come out with that same opinion, but if they don't win the national championship or even get to it.
Oh, that'll be the same.
It's going to be even louder
not going
next
anywhere.
Year. Yeah.
Even if he wins, and I brought this up a couple weeks ago, even if you beat Ohio State in the regular season, that'll still be the narrative.
Yeah.
He can't win the big one.
Well, it'll
but
be
it was
the,
a big one, but it's not the big one.
It'll
so
be
it's
the
not,
do it in the playoff.
Just move the okay. But yeah, you beat Ohio State in Columbus, but
it'll be do
just,
in the playoff.
Right. And I'm there too. Do it when it matters most. Another one, as a Texas fan, I have no faith in Steve Sarkisian. Dan Lanning would look great in burnt orange. So well, Texas fans not high on their coach.
I can't answer for LSU. LSU fan is, I think, like Alabama fan, perpetually looking for the next Nick Saban or the guy to win the championship for them. I think what's fascinating is how some Duck fan might be weary or worried or concerned or whatever about Dan Lanning in these playoff games because of the way it's ended. They love him, though.
Yes.
I've been wondering for 2 years now.
From a personality standpoint, he blows Sarkisian out the water.
Yeah, Sark in Texas. Yeah. Like, I don't think Texas fan is married to Steve Sarkisian. Mm-mm. I don't think Ohio State fan, until they won the title, was married to Ryan Day.
Notre Dame is with Marcus Freeman. They love him. Oregon is with Dan Lanning. They love him.
Miami is with Mario.
Chris the ball, he fits. It's,
exactly.
He's Miami man.
Yeah. There's not a lot of, like, the fan base is married or loves the coach. It's always, what are you going to do for me? And I think Texas and Sark are definitely in this relationship back and forth of like, you gonna win a natty or are you gonna miss the playoff again with a quarterback with experience?
Just imagine, say, like, if they miss the playoff again this year, imagine saying Arch Manning did not make the college football playoff as a starter.
Well, what kind of season does he have? Because if it's similar to last year, I'm gonna go, yeah, he was a disappointing player.
That'd be wild
according
to
the, you know, the hype
expectations
around
put on his shoulders. Somebody asking about Mike Elko. He is in a large group of tier three. The tier three on that coaching list, I'm not going to read the entire thing, but you get Dillingham, right? Who else is in there? Bob Chesney, Bielema, Brom, Campbell.
Chesney being in a tier three already is. Like, how is Sataki tier?
It's tough.
Like, I just, there's some guys that I think deserve to be tier two, tier three. Like, if you think Sataki's tier three, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's also BYU. How many players can they realistically get versus
somebody,
other programs?
And somebody making that argument with Whittingham that I disagree with, saying if Whittingham wasn't in Michigan, he wouldn't be in Tier 1, and I disagree with that completely. I think Whittingham is one of the most respected coaches in the sport, and there's the acknowledgement of you don't have the same resources everywhere, and to put yourself in the position you regularly put yourself in, that deserves a lot of credit. And that's kind of where I'm at with Sataki. I chuckled just saying that Rich Rodriguez was in that tier. It's one thing to hold on to Dabo in Tier 1 from winning a couple of titles 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Rich Rodriguez got close to competing for a national championship 20 years ago and didn't do it.
Yeah.
How is that Tier 3 worthy? That was the one I'm like, what? Okay.
I don't want to be named. Right. How's Bronco Mendenhall?
Yeah, I don't get
making
that
the list. And Clark Lee is the same level as Bronco Mendenhall.
They're in the same category as Elko and Dillingham and all, you know, Campbell, who did it for 10 years at Iowa State. Like, all right, man, all right. I saw that this was thrown out. I love when scenarios like this are thrown out because I think my answer is no.
Uh-huh.
But I'm wondering if I'm wrong in having the answer of no. Hmm. This came from the College Football Zone Twitter account, and it has about...
That sounds entirely fake.
It does, right? It's College Football on X. They have about 4,000 votes on this, and to give you a glimpse of how split it is, 50.8% said yes, 49.2% said no. Here is the question. You're offered a deal that if you do not watch a single college football game this season, live, replay, highlights, none of it. Can't watch anything, but in return, your team goes undefeated and makes the national championship
no
and
deal.
Has a 50-50 shot at winning
no
it.
No deal.
It's a no deal, right?
It's a dumb deal.
It's a dumb deal.
That's not even, I'm not even thinking about that.
For a 50-50 shot at the title, I certainly would love, but not enough to miss the entire journey there.
It's easier.
It's about the friends we make along the way.
Exactly. It's a lot easier for you to sit here and say no deal because your team has probably a 50-50 chance.
They could do it. Yeah.
Depending on the opponent and the matchups. My team doesn't. And I would even tell you, with my team, no deal.
No deal.
Why would I not want to watch college football?
Right.
Do you know how many things that gets me out of in my life?
Right.
Hey, we got a dinner at my aunt's house.
Sorry. Sorry, babe.
Sorry. It's a massive game that might talk 5 minutes about on Monday.
It's LSU Ole Miss weekend. Sorry, I'm not going to be able to make it.
You know, thing and a deal and a no deal.
No deal. Deal, no deal.
There's no deal. I wouldn't do that, and I want my team to win a Super Bowl.
Sure.
I wouldn't do that.
Not
in the
even
NFL.
For a Super Bowl.
Yeah. No.
What if I guarantee you a championship?
No.
Yeah.
You don't enjoy it. You wouldn't enjoy it.
Could I wonder if there's a scenario where could I DVR all the games and then watch them after the season? But then you would miss out on your championship season.
You don't
season.
Get to react.
Yeah.
What
living
a miserable
and dying
existence.
With the week in and week out of the ups and downs are worth it.
People need to be strong. Like, what's the poll results?
50.2% said
people
yes.
People need a spine.
51-49, essentially.
How are you alive? You're not living and dying with the results of what your college team is doing. You can't get through a weekend without knowing what an 18-23-year-old is going to do.
Dude.
You don't deserve to be living.
I am so
what
ready
is your problem?
For underage kids to ruin my life
and
my mood. I am so ready for that
to
happen.
Why is this 19-year-old not doing what I said he would do on Thursday?
Some freshman fumbling a punt on the road at USC and me yelling at my TV. Dude, I can't wait to get there. Ruin
what's
my
wrong
life.
With him? His girlfriend dumped him on TikTok. I didn't know that.
Let's dive into, before we get to our buddy Ken Barkley at the top of the hour, a couple of baseball notes, including how far is this hole going to go? Mm. And a random stat thing I want to throw at you because it made me chuckle. That's next on The Fam.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey, y'all. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you
it's
get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.
The man, the myth, the legend himself, Ken Barkley, will join us coming up 14 minutes from now. Been a while since when was the last time we had him on? Halloween? Does that sound right?
Was it Christmas?
Christmas, maybe?
Did we have him on for the NCAA tournament?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, then it was
Halloween or Christmas.
It's almost been a year.
Yeah.
How is he doing?
What's the play?
Ken Barkley will join us 14 minutes from now. We got Sadder Story coming up in the final hour of the show. There's a lot still to get to. I got just a random baseball stat that I saw. Kind of made me chuckle. I'll throw that at you in a moment.
You bringing baseball to a topic is fascinating.
Well, the Mark Walter thing is blowing my mind. They are the most successful. That's a baseball story. He's the most successful franchise in baseball.
I also view it as a Laker story.
Yeah, but he's also the owner of the Dodgers before the Lakers. Yeah. What team has won back-to-back championships?
Dodgers.
What team is going to lead to a lockout this offseason?
Wow.
They are. Like, you can disagree with the notion of it. They are going to lead to a lockout. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, we're going to have a lockout this year, and it's primarily because of what the Dodgers have done. And now all of this is coming out, and it's feeling as if this is Bernie Madoff 2.0.
I mean, I don't know how you don't have the takeaway.
And he might not go to prison because we have a president who you can buy a pardon from him, and so yeah. That's probably what Mark Walter's strategy is going to be.
Well, he gave him a World Series ring, and I think they caught Trump saying, like, out loud, don't have to report this.
Yeah, dude. Like, we know how this goes. Anybody who pays attention to the news does. Yeah. He has $1.1 billion coming due in 6 weeks, Mark Walter does. Not the Lakers, not the insurers. In February, this comes from Eric Jackson. His holding company signed an equity commitment to help buy Clear Channel Outdoor, the billboard company, along with Abu Dhabi's Mubadala Capital, mm-hmm. for $1.1 billion payable at closing. And then he owes $6.5 billion to an insurance regulator by the end of the calendar year. That is $7.6 billion due in 90 days. The commitment letter is dated February 9, 2026. The grand jury subpoenas reached his insurers the same month. It is insane. And then added on top of that, it absolutely seems like a Ponzi scheme, what's going on behind the scenes. One of the things that gives the Dodgers their biggest advantage in spending money is their local TV deal. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. They don't have to revenue share because they inked the deal when they went bankrupt and said they reached a sweetheart deal that lasts another 14 years. He tried to buy him out of that TV deal.
He approached him, yeah, to give him
saying,
cash.
Give
right
me
now.
A lump sum. I'll yep. let you out of this TV deal that's $300 million because I need the cash. That's how bad this is, yeah. behind the scenes.
Yep.
That the owner of the team has something that is the biggest advantage over all of his competitors, and he's trying to buy out of it,
yeah.
14 years or 13 years before the deal runs out. And look, I don't know where this is going to go. Again, he's probably not going to go to prison because rules don't matter for rich people in America anymore. But I every time I see an update on this, it's blowing my mind. And this is the back-to-back defending champion LA Dodgers owner who seems to be Bernie Madoff 2.0.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think we're saying the same thing here. I can't believe somebody bought the Lakers and about a year later they had to sell
it. That shows you in how much bad financial shape they're in. He needs liquid assets. He can't tie it up in owning a team.
I also don't know how Kushner and Iger have the money for this. People have looked at their net worths. It's not $12.5 billion.
I don't know how any of that stuff works.
There's another guy that there's not being talked about. They think behind the scenes is actually the money behind all of it, but they're letting Iger and Kushner be the kind of face fronting side of this. And then you got the Jeannie Buss lawsuit,
right.
against her own family for trying to sell the remaining Buss stakes, and she doesn't want to give it up. It is a wild story because right now it's got all the stench of Bernie Madoff 2.0.
Yes.
The problem is it does not matter what you do, fraud, no fraud, you ain't going to prison. And I think that much is abundantly clear for Mark Walters. I think he has done enough to secure stuff for the federal government where he is going to get probably a pardon out of this. And if the worst case scenario is he's going to be limited to never being able to do certain things and he's never going to own a sports franchise again. Other than that, it's just utterly nuts that the owner of a Lakers Dodgers is so cash strapped that he has to go to a TV network,
yeah.
and beg them for an upfront lump sum to get out of a deal that any team in baseball, if they could benefit the way the Dodgers have, right. would never want to get out of.
Right.
So it just, what's happened in the last week or so with Mark Walter when it was announced that he was being investigated?
Yeah, I remember that was a little blip on the radar, like, oh, that's interesting.
Huh? Federal probe going into it, and you're like, oh, okay, that's, wow, really? And
right.
then, boom, within a week, all of this is ramped up to the point where he's just, we know he needs cash straight up because he doesn't have the amount that he owes by the end of the calendar year.
Yeah, and I saw there was a clip from Ramona Shelburne this morning saying the Dodgers aren't for sale. And I chuckle at that, dude. Like, she's certainly plugged in and has insight in ways that I don't. If I would ask you a month ago, are the Lakers for sale? What would your answer have been?
A month ago?
No.
I mean, no.
That was not on anybody's radar. That yeah. We were on the air. You were on vacation when that happened. It was like, what? It happened while we were on the air.
I'm telling you, I saw it on the YouTube chat. Double take. Like, I'm like, no way.
What? Who Lakers. Bought those? And it was the Kushner cat who was trying to buy FIFA and put all that cash into the World Cup and yeah. give all, you know, spread that money around. And that thankfully got shot down by the soccer bros out there. It's just like the idea that somebody has an ownership stake in the franchise, in the TV deal, or the TV company that broadcasts those games, that's the biggest TV deal in the history of sports from a local standpoint, and then also owns the insurance companies that are servicing the debt and the restructuring of finances. Like, it just, none of that should be legal. How was all of this allowed to go on?
Yeah.
And the added layer of all of this is the fact that the Lakers story was shocking because you just don't see somebody buy a team and then a year later sell it. That just doesn't happen, let alone the valuation going up $2 billion. That made me chuckle, especially with LeBron leaving.
Well, it's a brand that, I mean, they haven't been sold.
I know.
Like, this is a
$10
billion
to $12 billion.
Brand.
It's like, all right, what changed $2 billion in 16 months?
You know, people text me, it's like, Tom, don't he make $1 billion? Would he sell it right now?
I hope so. Let's do it, man. Get out of here, Tom. Should have sold to Phil Knight years ago when you had the chance. But just the idea that this is the guy in the team who is, whether we like it or not or agree with the sentiment or not, they're leading to a lockout in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Paxton's already said it's going to happen in December.
We're going to miss games. Now, how many games did we miss? Is it the entire season, half a season, quarter season? Nobody knows. And at some point, you hope that clear heads prevail and we get an answer that saves the sport and gets us out of that nightmare. It is just hilarious for a league who, like, a lot of people want to defend what they've done behind the scenes because they're spending money in ways that, why isn't your owner spending money? And the counter argument to that is that people don't have that level of a TV deal where you don't have to, like, we don't have the financial ability to do that. That is the argument. But now that it's coming out that they're essentially just funneling the money in a circle from an insurance company, a TV channel, and a baseball team, like, that's why they're able to do this. And that's why it's that big of a deal. And it's only going to amplify the calls for a lockout and stopping them operating the way that no other team is allowed to operate.
Well, the one thing, too, I would say is, like, the Lakers are having to restructure their organization because of the sale. And there's some concern that the restructuring of everything at this point, because we're only about a month away from camp.
Yeah.
And then you're about, what, a month and a half, almost 2 months away from the season.
The game starting, yeah, middle of October.
And so there's restructuring things they're trying to figure out. The Dodger thing, I can't speak as a Dodger fan, but what I would say is somebody that's been following the Dodgers and seeing them have this dominant run where they're getting all the players, it's kind of an odd thing that if he has to sell, I'm just not concerned. I don't think you're going to go through a what was the guy that the,
Frank McCourt.
Frank McCourt. You're not going to go through a Frank McCourt situation because if they're on the market, the richest people that want
to buy him,
they'll buy him.
Yep.
They have one player that's an entire economy just by himself.
The question that I have that lingers to this, though, is simply that the biggest financial benefit they have currently, outside of the Shohei Ohtani economy, which is a thing,
yeah,
is their TV deal.
Yeah.
And is that blown up as a part of this because it's seen as fraudulent behind the scenes?
The fact that they didn't get out of it probably helps, right?
It does, but if this guy's getting tied down for fraudulent activity and he also owns, by the way, the television channel that gave the deal to the Dodgers.
Yeah. Well, the guy that tried to buy the Blazers with Phil Knight, I know he's a Dodger guy.
He's a Dodger. I can't remember his name. But
I don't know what the percentage stake of the ownership group is.
Secondary guy in L.A.
Right. I know he's not the front-facing one. But, like, I don't know what the percentage looks like with the remaining group and then who comes in to buy. I just, because it's the Dodgers, I have a hard time believing unsands the lockout that all that's going to get blown
that
up.
I agree with you. That point is valid. I'm just curious what, where this all goes, I don't know how. I'm just, every day there's a new story that comes out and something that drops. I'm like, the hole just got a little bit deeper. Every day.
Well, and it's iconic franchises, the Lakers, Dodgers. That's just crazy.
The random stat is the last player to hit a home run for the Cincinnati Reds in the playoffs was Sinshu Chu in 2013. I saw that yesterday, and I thought that's kind
of
depressing.
Are the Reds about to make the playoffs?
No, that's the whole point. They're not going again. They have not had a player hit a home run in a playoff game since 2013.
Why are you giving me a red stat?
I don't know. I saw it yesterday and I thought, God, that's crazy and depressing simultaneously.
Is that the year they lost to your team?
No, that would have been 2012.
Yeah,
they got back the next year. Poor Reds fans. Same for the Pirates. They haven't hit one since 2013 as well. We got a lot to get to in the final hour. Stat or story at 9:27. But we start with our good buddy, Ken Barkley. His long-awaited return to the program is next on The Fam.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.